In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
Let's begin today with a little tour through what a slow-motion political car crash looks like. It begins in Ontario in November of 2019.
This is all coming in the heels of passing of Bill 124, which would cap public worker salary increases at 1% for the following 3 years, that causing plenty of criticism from major unions across the province.
The story continues the following June amidst some of the worst of the pandemic.
Many today spent the day marching to Queen's Park, rallying against Bill 124, the legislation passed late last year.
And I'm skipping a lot of protests here, but a couple of years after that, with questions about the legality of Bill 124 continuing, the protests keep coming.
Healthcare workers came together, rallying for the Ford Conservative government to reconsider legislation that caps salary increases for nurses to a 1% a year.
Next, we go to last year, 3 years after the bill's debut, when we do, in fact, end up in court.
The Ford government is now fighting public sector workers in court to uphold its controversial wage restraint law. If they lose, they'll be on the hook for billions of dollars in back pay.
The outcome of the court case is not great for the government.
An Ontario court has struck down Bill 124.
And then came the inevitable ending earlier this month.
Bill 124 is no more. The Ford government has officially repealed the controversial wage restraint legislation.
So here we are, with billions of dollars in back pay for public workers, an Ontario budget tabled this week that is not even close to balancing, and some very obvious questions. How did nobody in the government see this ending coming? Why didn't they simply back down when it became clear this would be a prolonged legal fight? How much taxpayer money could have been saved by simply giving public sector workers their raises instead of fighting it for more than 4 years? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Richard Southern is the Queen's Park reporter with City News. He has had a front row seat to this entire lengthy affair. Hey, Richard.
Good to be back with you. Hello from Queen's Park.
You've been at Queen's Park for a while, so you've, I guess, seen this whole sordid affair from start to finish. Let's start with the basics. What is, or I guess it's fair to say now, what was Bill 124 and who did it apply to?
Well, I remember being in the news conference for this when the government called it out of the blue. One afternoon in June of 2019, those innocent days before the pandemic came along. And this was a big news conference. This was a big story. And boy, it remained a big story for years. Bill 124 was essentially a wage restraint law. You know, this is a government, the Ford government, Jordan, that loves its colorful namings of its bill. And it called this bill the, quote, Protecting a Sustainable Public Sector for Future Generations Act. It imposed a 1% pay increase on public sector workers for 3 years. From 2020 to 2023, public sector workers, you know, nurses, teachers, could only get a wage increase of no more than 1% a year. The bill was introduced in June 2019. It became law. And, you know, this was a year where the province employed more than a million such civil servants. They paid a lot in salary for those workers. You know, the budget in that year was about $163 million, of which $72 million was used for salaries. So, you know, the way the government framed it back then was, listen, this is a way for us to tackle the growing bottom line in the budget. And that's the way they framed it back then. As you might expect, it didn't go over very well with these workers, Jordan.
Right. And as you mentioned, you know, pre-pandemic times, precedented times even, right before COVID hit, I think the general public learned a lot more about how valuable nurses are, for sure, teachers as well. And, you know, we're now speaking almost 5 years after that bill's initial introduction. Can you just detail for us the bitter and incredibly lengthy fight over this bill? How bad was it?
It got very bitter. And, you know, as you say, it was only a few months later that the pandemic hit and everyone was saying, "What? Why are we giving these nurses only 1% a year? They're doing so much here." It was in December of 2019 that a number of unions announced they were launching a legal challenge against Bill 124. And, you know, they argued in court, Jordan, that this was a direct attack on the bargaining rights of workers in the province. September 2022, we have the Ontario Superior Court hearing this case. You know, a lot of the teachers' unions were involved in this. And lo and behold, the court rules, yes, this is unconstitutional. The court agreed with the unions in this case, ruling Bill 124 unconstitutional. Now, the government stood by it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ford government appealed to the top court in Ontario, Jordan.
And that appeal takes us to recent days, which is staggering that it's gone on for this long. But what was the result of that appeal? What happened earlier this month to finally, I guess, begin closing the book on this?
Yeah, the court's moving dangerously slow in Ontario. That's a story for another big story. But yeah, March of this year, the Court of Appeal in Ontario, which is the top court in the province, agreed with the lower court, saying this was an unconstitutional law. Up until this point, up until March of this year, the government had stood by the bill. The premier continued to defend it. But when this ruling came out, the government finally threw in the towel, Jordan, said it was repealing Bill 124 in its entirety all these years later.
Can you quickly explain why the court would call it unconstitutional? What is unconstitutional about it?
Well, I mean, we just go back to, I guess, what we heard from the unions. You know, they said that it prevented them from getting the salary they deserved. It ran contrary to their collective bargaining process.
Right.
And that it hurt staffing levels as well. You know, you have a right to have a proper procedure when your contract is up or however your contract is structured. And, you know, a lot of times, depending on the institution you're working for, you might be entitled to getting a rate of inflation.
Right.
Certainly 1%, even back in 2019, when inflation wasn't running nearly as hot as it is now, that was below certainly the rate of inflation. These workers believed they had a right to a fair process when it came to salary, and they argue they didn't get that here, and the court ended up agreeing.
And Ford's government repealed the bill. It is gone. It is no more. Before we get to this week's budget, what does that mean for pay for the past 3.5-4 years for these public sector workers? What happens to that money?
They're getting back pay. And that already started to happen, actually, even before the Ontario Court of Appeal made its ruling. Ontario public sector servants have been awarded so far about 6.5%.
Okay.
As far as retroactive pay is concerned, nurses have got some, teachers have got some. Even LCBO employees, those who work for the Liquor Control Board in the province, have gotten some back pay. They're fighting for more, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. But yeah, about 6.5% in retroactive pay have gone out to many of these public sector workers, Jordan.
Do we have any idea what impact that has on the government's bottom line?
We do. In fact, the government here at Queen's Park on Tuesday tabled its latest budget. And this was the biggest spending budget in Ontario history, totaling $214 billion, with a deficit that ballooned dramatically to almost $10 billion. And Bill 124 played a role in that. You know, we did see in this budget higher costs to some sectors like education, health, and justice. And that was because, as we say, the provinces started to pay out big settlements in the wake of Bill 124. The government has so far confirmed to us that it has spent about $6 billion in Bill 124 remedies thus far. It has, though, Jordan, kind of been reluctant to break down those costs as far as where exactly they're coming from. We do know that to pay for this, at least in the budget, the government did draw on its $2.8 billion contingency fund in the books, which dwindled to about half a billion in this latest spending document. This is, though, as we say, just the tip of the iceberg, and the government could be set to incur more costs here.
How much of that $6 billion is money that honestly should have probably just gone to the public sector workers in the first place, and it's what they're due? And how much of it is money that was solely spent fighting for this bill all the way up the justice system?
Well, you make a good point, and I've asked the finance minister as recently as last month the question, how much taxpayer money have you spent fighting this case? What are the lawyers' costs involved here? That we don't know. The government does not answer that question. We do know, as far as the direct payments are concerned, they've, as we said, totaled more than $6 billion. You know, obviously the government is not too keen, I wouldn't think, to go into details on this, in that it hasn't, I don't think, been a winning issue for them at all.
Right.
You know, I asked the finance minister recently, do you now regret Bill 124? And he says no. He points to the fact that it was, as he says, a different time back in 2019, prior to the pandemic and prior to the big inflation we've seen. So in the budget on Tuesday, the government specifically said it would not be breaking down these costs going forward into next year at all, that they would just be built in to these particular sectors, sector spending, be it for education or health.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
I take the minister's point that when this bill was initially passed, regardless of what you think of it personally, what side of the disagreement you're on, it was a different time. It was before the pandemic. So point taken there. What did he say about then why, after it became brutally clear during the pandemic that these public sector workers were valuable and were, I mean, even the government was calling them heroes, why they wouldn't back down when it became clear that, like, you are in for, at best, a protracted legal fight and a lot of bad press?
Hard to understand that. You know, and it is a government that has, I think it's fair to say, gone back, flip-flopped on some initiatives, and maybe I think it's fair to say done so kicking and screaming. So hard to understand maybe why this was drawn out so much, particularly since I think it was Global News that first reported it, that government briefing notes for the then Minister of Health, I think it was in 2022, showed that Bill 124 hurt nursing staffing levels. Huh. The government knew for a fact that this was detrimental in some respect staffing-wise in places like hospitals, yet they continue to forge ahead with it, Jordan.
When you mention, like, the $6 billion are the costs that we've been given right now, and we're told it could be more, how is that more being calculated or determined?
Yeah, I mean, the Financial Accountability Office just recently, this is the an independent body, said that compensation for public sector workers for Bill 124 could end up costing the government, and that's taxpayers, could end up costing more than $13 billion by the time it's all said and done.
Okay.
Now, you know, fair to say some of this would have been spent anyways throughout those 3 years if these workers had have gotten the you know, gone through the proper bargaining process.
Right.
Anyways, but as you say, there's obviously a lot of legal fees and whatnot baked into this. So taxpayers could be on the hook for $13 billion. I'm not so sure, though, we're going to ever get the full picture here.
I want to talk to you about the healthcare part of this specifically. And because I know it's an area that you've covered pretty intensely in your time at Queen's Park, this is a government that has, as we've discussed before, moved to fund private surgeries and in some cases, private nurses. How have they determined to fund those private clinics or private surgeries versus, you know, paying the nurses what clearly now the courts have said that they were due anyway?
Yeah, I mean, healthcare funding has been and remains a really hot, interesting topic here at Queen's Park. You know, it was recently revealed that Ontario hospitals and long-term care homes spent nearly $1 billion on agency staff last year, right? Mm-hmm. You know, these agency nurses make a lot more money coming from these independent third parties, cost the government a lot more money. So that's a huge issue, and how the government is dealing with that continues to be a big source of contention here at Queen's Park, with the opposition saying, hey, you should maybe pay hospital nurses a better wage to keep them in the public hospital sector rather than going down this private agency nursing road, Jordan.
What does this legal decision, and I guess the entire saga of this bill, mean in Ontario, but also maybe in other provinces, as a precedent for governments of all political stripes that may want to try to control the salaries of public sector workers rather than getting in those protracted labor disputes?
It was a big win for the unions in Ontario. And I can't imagine another government would anytime soon try and go down this road. I mean, not that we ever didn't appreciate what nurses did, but I think we really learned to appreciate them a lot more during the pandemic, even without that big health scare. I think this was a difficult PR battle for the government to win, maybe an unwinnable one. And I think future governments will probably take note of that, Jordan.
Last question for you. As you already mentioned, this is a government that has backed down from several things, as we've talked about before. This one took so long, Richard. What was it like watching this unfold over so many months and years? You know, there were dozens of protests. There were appeals to different levels of the judicial system. Like, it's a story from another era that is getting closed today.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, even though the bill only capped wages for 3 years, I mean, here we are still trying to figure out the back pay. I mean, it was a big story because a lot of people said, well, why should any worker have to accept a 1% pay increase? That's if it's less than inflation, it's a cut. Why are we cutting the salaries of our nurses and our teachers? Now, the other big part of the story that we haven't talked about too, Jordan, was there were some public sector workers that the government exempted in Bill 124, notably police officers. For whatever reason, the government decided not to apply that 1% cap to them. They got their much higher salary increases. It's been an interesting story, one I think the Ford government would be happy to forget.
That's so interesting about police officers, given that they made this decision in 2019, and then we had the pandemic and the defund the police movement the subsequent year. And it's like they got the PR of this bill backwards in advance.
The timing was not good for the government on this. And, you know, again, as we said off the top, the government tried to frame it as a way to get costs under control. Here we are now, with the Ford government in Ontario having tabled the biggest spending budget in Ontario history, featuring the largest subnational debt in the entire world. So, I mean, the opposition are certainly arguing, hey, if the government was at one point trying to get finances under control, they're arguing that's no longer the case with all the red ink on the books.
There's never a dull moment covering the Ford government. Thank you, as always, Richard, for bringing it to us in detail.
Always great to be on The Big Story. Thanks, Jordan.
Richard Southern, Queen's Park reporter for City News. That was The Big Story. For more from us, including previous episodes featuring Richard covering this government, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can always talk to us whether you think we're great, or think we're horrible, or think we need to pay attention to something that we are not. The ways to reach out to us are via email, that is hello@thebigstorypodcast.ca, and by leaving a voicemail when you call 416-935-5935. If you're listening to The Big Story in Apple Podcasts, perhaps, or Spotify, or any platform that lets you leave us a review, we'd love it if you took a minute or two to let us know what you think. Not only do we read them all and take your feedback seriously, leaving a written review helps other people discover this show, if that's something you want those other people to do. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We have an episode, speaking of feedback, full of yours tomorrow, and then The Big Story returns on Monday.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.